Yeah, that's what I'm, and caring, and he was from a very bad home, and
mm-hmm.
And when I left, he cried. I formed an attachment.
And did you keep up with him after?
Yeah, I went back the next year. He was in my friend's class, and I kept him, you know. But and then he was expelled, and the whole series of things happened.
Mm-hmm. After you left. Uh-huh.
But I didn't keep him there. I mean, I tried. I had his mother come in and help, too, so that I could.
Right. You usually love the bad kids.
The bad ones.
Let's move it away from the family then, because I'm hoping none of you are going to say that you have a favorite child, or you'll say you have four.
There's a special reason. I mean, that's your favorite.
But she didn't do anything to be your favorite. She was just born. There's nothing about her quality.
But there's certain, the second Naomi was
the most. She made your mother.
That's right. Okay. Naomi, then the second one's the most like me, so naturally she's my And Maki was a challenge. I mean, she is very, very bright, but she didn't assert herself in any way whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, Debbie's my baby, so naturally she's my favorite.
Uh-huh.
So really, you know, my favorite. Four favorites.
Right.
Each in a different way.
Right. So, but we see as your teachers, as a parent, you don't necessarily have a favorite, or each child is a favorite in their own way. Each child has their strengths and their weaknesses that you acknowledge, that you develop, or that you squash, that you do your best to mold. And as a teacher, though, and did you find as a seamstress you had customers you liked more than others?
Yes.
Would you care to elaborate?
Well, I would say that I did like some of them better than the others.
The ones who were nice to you?
Yes.
Okay. So you liked the bad ones. Was he nice to you, or he was close to that to you?
No, but he was nice. I always liked the ones nobody liked.
Okay. Because he's downtrodden. Down staircase. okay.
That's why we're such good friends.
Oh, there you go. There you go. So here we have two sides here. You like the nice ones, one who says thank you, the ones who said hello, the ones who said please could you take care of this for me. You like the ones
needy
who nobody else cared
needy
for.
Ones. Yeah, the very needy.
The very needy ones who needed your attention. Let's look and keep this theme moving away from biological children to other people that we experience in our. You have students. Do you have a favorite student or favorite students, favorite class?
I tend to agree. Those that are needy,
What about the students who are overachievers, who are involved in everything, president of the student council, captain of the basketball team? What about those students?
Like the teacher's pets.
Right. So why, isn't that interesting? Here we have two teachers in the room, at least. Are you a teacher?
No.
Are you a teacher? Are you a teacher? Yeah, so you have four teachers in the room aside from myself, because I'm going to keep out of this conversation in case if any of my students happen to listen to the name. But from the four teachers in this room, two so far have said that they favor the needy students as opposed to the outgoing, popular students. What about you?
I think I'm different. I teach special ed, so I have all areas of special ed.
Okay.
Visually impaired, cognitively impaired, all areas of cognitively impaired.
Mm-hmm.
Cerebral palsy, vision.
Okay, so let's talk about
everybody has different needs, and
so let's talk about the children who progress quicker as opposed to children who progress slower. Do you have a preference?
Mm-hmm.
Each child is unique and special to you in that way. Mm-hmm. Okay, Zoya, have you had a classroom experience?
Oh yeah.
Okay, and
I like the people that are true to the challenge, and that I have specific twins in my class always give me a challenge.
Okay. Are they nasty about it, or they're questioning and probing?
They're not nasty about it, but they always have something to say, and then you think about it, and then you give them a feedback.
Okay.
So I like the challenge ones.
Okay. So there you have it, folks. We have three people in this room that we could possibly compare to Yitzhak Avinu. Let's take a look, open up our connection to the beginning of Parshat Toldot, where we actually left off last week. The beginning of Parshat Toldot.
No, but
our topic this evening, in broad terms, is discussing Rivka as a mother.
No.
And we're going to begin by looking at the beginning of the Parsha in Parakat Hey, chapter 25, page 126. And 127. 126 and 127. So Rivka gives birth. Behold, she has twins, Yaakov and Esav. Well, Esav rather, and Yaakov. Yitzchak is 6 years old when they're born. We're looking at verse 27, Pasuk Chavzayin. Vayigdalu ha-ne'arim. The boys grew up. Vayehi Esav ish yodea tzayid ish sadeh. And Esav was a man who knew how to trap, a man of the field. The Yaakov ishtam yosevo halim. Yaakov was a, the English translation here is wholesome. It could be explained as simple. It could be explained as complete. A dweller of tents. Yosev ohalim. Vayahav Yitzchak et Esav. Yitzchak loved Esav. Ki tzayid b'fiv, because he had trappings in his mouth. Rivka ohevet et Yaakov, and Rivka loves Yaakov. So here we have a possible case of nepotism. Yitzchak's favorite is Esav, the bad kid, so to speak, or at least the wild kid, the one who is not going to sit quietly and read a book when you say now is quiet time, the one who's going to be running in the fields, who can't wait for recess, who can't wait for gym, who needs to get the physical energy out. And you have Yaakov, who is possibly, as the Midrashim have explained to us, somewhat more of a student than Esav is. And clearly, using 20/20 hindsight, because we might as well, because we have it, which one was the good seed and which one was the bad seed in the end? Yaakov was the good seed, Esav was the bad seed. Okay. So 3 out of 4 teachers in this room, those who are saying that they had favorites, would say they would favor the Esav type child. Mm-hmm. Not the one who's the good student, who's advancing properly, mm-hmm. and who's sitting nicely and reading his book during deer. Do you have deer in your school? Mm-hmm. So, did you have deer drop everything and read? That's time that they would have
deer.
Not the inner city. No. Drop everything and play ball.
Drop everything.
Okay, so here, this is a pasuk that's very much troubling to us when we initially read it, when we come around to the Parshat HaShavua, but now, in just this brief introduction and ourselves thinking about ourselves who we favor, it's very possible the Yitzchak is not so off the mark. What about Rivka then? Does Rivka, if we're saying that Yitzchak is right for favoring the needy child, then what about Rivka? Rivka didn't favor the needy child. She favored the overachiever. She favored the tzaddikal, the one who was going to be great, the one who was going to be amazing and wonderful and the leader of the Jewish people. Okay. So now we're going to pass around these sheets. They're staggered. You should get 2 sheets apiece. I've collated them for you. So look through some of the sources and try to understand, because this is a phrase that very, very much bothers the commentators. You take the top 2 sheets. Everyone take the top 2.
Took me
one. There you go. You're a teacher. Come on, you never did that. You're too late to staple. I understand. So we're going to begin with what we would call the most straightforward explanation. Take just the top 2 sheets. You took 2 of the same. Yeah.
1 of each.
No, just the top 2. There you go. That's it. Okay, good. Let's move. All right. Rashbam is known as the most straightforward interpreter of the Torah. Like, really, except Ibn Ezra. The 2 of them are really very, very straightforward. He was Rashi's grandson. Rashi lived in the end of the 11th century, beginning of the 12th century. So Rashbam, say, lived at the end of the 12th century, beginning of the 13th century. He was Rashi's grandson, and he learned a lot from Rashi. But he really took a totally different tact than Rashi does. Very straightforward, very direct way of reading the text. He says as follows. Why did she love Yaakov so much? He says, look just a couple psukim before. And we read this last week. Well, we skipped over these psukim last week. But if you just turn the page to the previous page, if you remember, the babies were fighting inside of her so strongly, and she didn't know what was going on, and she wanted to know if this was normal, so she went to ask a Navi, is this normal? And then Abby said to her, "You have two nations in your womb, Shnei Goyim Bivitnech," on page 124 and 125 and verse 23. Pasuk Chaf Gimel. "Shnei Goyim Bivitnech," there are two nations in your womb. "Ushnei Le'umim Mime'aychi Paredu," and the two nations will be separated from your inside. "Uba'om Mil'om Ya'amat," the might shall pass from one to the other, is the English translation here. "V'rav Ya'avot Sha'ir," the older one will serve the younger one. Not willingly necessarily, not joyfully necessarily, but the older one will serve the younger one. Which means what? Who's going to be stronger? Who's going to be more important? The younger one. The Tzair. Something is interesting to notice that I just thought of now. Here we make this whole big deal about the switching of the Bechorah, that really Esav was supposed to get the bracha and then Yaakov got the bracha. But if you look at the Sukkim, who was supposed to come out first?
Esav came out first.
You came out first, but who was supposed to come out
first?
Oh, it doesn't say, yes. If Yaakov was hanging onto the heel of Esav.
So he came out second.
He came out second, but right. Is it possible maybe that he was supposed to come out first and Esav pushed him aside to get forward? It wouldn't be entirely out of Esav's personality. I don't know if it's physically possible, but you know, in the Midrash, anything is physically possible. But it's an idea, just something to think about. So Rashbam says as follows. So Heman and Yaakov in source number one. Shahaita makeret betumato v'gam imash amah hakadosh v'rav yavod seir. Why did she love him? She loved him for his completeness, for his wholeness, because he was an ish tam, he was a simple, complete man. Simple and complete are two different words. Let's go with complete. She appreciated his perfection. And that's why she loved him. And in addition, she also knew that God had said that the older would serve the younger one. So she favored him, it sounds like. And it explains, and the Torah says, how come though, then Rashbam asks the question, okay, but how come then Yitzchak's preference is listed before Rivka's presence? He says, why are we knowing, not that one is for the other, but why do we need to know their preferences altogether? To explain what was behind the switch. Why Yitzchak really wanted to bless Esav, and why Rivka really wanted Yaakov to get the bracha in the end. That it seems that there was favoritism. Yitzchak liked Esav better, simply. Yaakov and Rivka liked Yaakov better, simply. Fine, that's one interpretation. And she liked him better because she knew he'd be the more important one. Great, good mothering. Okay, that was sarcastic. Source number two, Sephorno. Sephorno lives much later than Rashbam. Sephorno is a 16th century Italian doctor who lives in Italy, being that he was Italian. Okay, source number two. Yehav Yitzchak et Esav. What does he say? Yehav Yitzchak et Esav, gam et Esav. In other words, you would assume that since Yitzchak was such a tzaddik, who was he going to favor? The tzaddik. He would favor Yaakov. So why does the Torah tell us it's like, you know, very similar to the kaveret avicha ve'imacha, honor your father and your mother. Why does the Torah say father first and then mother? Because it's natural to honor your mother, not your father, so the father is put first to remind you, don't forget about your father. So here, why does it say that Yaakov that Yitzchak loves Esav? Because of course he's going to love Yaakov, but he also loved Esav. Even though he knew without a doubt, shelo hayah shalem ki Yaakov, he knew without a doubt that Yaakov wasn't, that Esav wasn't as complete as Yaakov. The Rivka ohevet et Yitzchak, et Yaakov levado. She only loved Yaakov, not Esav, mipnei she'hekira b'risho shel Esav, and here, because she understood and recognized the evil in Esav. And here, this is what brings us to our title tonight. Is it nepotism or good sense? Is it showing that she's favoring who's better, Yitzchak or Rivka? Is it better that Yitzchak loves Esav, even though all his negative things? Or Rivka, who's realizing that Esav is a lost cause, so she might as well just focus her energies on Yaakov. Now, how does she know? Now, here's the difference between you as teachers, us as teachers, because everybody's really teachers, but here's the difference between the teachers in the room and Yitzchak. The teachers in the room could be compared to Yitzchak. We don't know what the outcome is going to be. Of course we're going to pick on the needy ones, because you assume that if you don't take care of the needy ones, they're not going to get anywhere. So you want to take them where they're supposed to go. And Yitzchak could have very well, according to what Shmuel's explaining to us, looked at Esav and said, Esav, you're needy, you need more attention, you're not going in the right direction, let me help you go in the right direction. I want to give you the bracha, because I think that you have this potential, which is what we do as teachers. But Rivka, why is Rivka different? Because why is Rivka different than we as teachers, or than Yitzchak in this case?
She's a mother.
More than that, even stronger than her as a mother. A mother, you would think, also would nurture the weaker child, because the older child maybe doesn't need it as much.
Well, she felt maybe that Yaakov loved Esav better, so she...
Yitzchak loved Esav better.
I mean, Yitzchak loved Esav better, so she didn't want Yaakov to feel, hey, he's not loved as much.
Right, but according to Smyrna, Yitzchak loved both. So when it says that he loved Esav, and then Esav in addition to Yaakov, because of course it's a no-brainer that he's going to love Yaakov. So why is whereas Yitzchak loved both of them, her focus was solely, achterak, only exclusively on Yaakov. That's my question. Is it nepotism, or is it good sense?
She foretold maybe what was going to be, and it needed a leader, right? All the characteristics, I don't know.
It's even stronger. It's right in here.
That she was prophesied by a...
She was. Yeah. She knew for certain. We spoke about this last night with the Rambam. How the Rambam gives a guarantee. Says Rabbi Rieti, he quoted us from the Rambam. Rambam gives a guarantee if you follow his health directives, you will live long, you will live a healthy life, you will never need a doctor, you will never get sick, except for plagues. I think common cold is considered a plague that comes through, you know, that you can't defend against. You will never need a doctor, ever. And the question he asked was, how can you say this? Doctors don't make promises. Doctors can't make promises. It's all guesswork, medicine anyway. You don't really know what's going on. So the answer is, because Rambam understood the way the body works. And he got it directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, directly from Hashem and the tradition that goes from generation to generation to generation. That God told us how his body works. And basically, Rambam says, I mean, it's a no-brainer what he says. He says, listen to your body. Your body's giving you messages. When it's hungry, eat. When you're thirsty, drink. When you're tired, go to sleep. You know, you have to listen to your body because your body is sending you these messages. The point of this connection was...
It was a prophecy.
Right, right, thank you. And he was sure, he was able to say this, that you will not have a doctor, because he knew that that's what the tradition said. That's what Hashem said. So here she's getting a message directly from Hashem. Now I'm hot in here. What's the heat going so high? She's getting a message directly from Hashem, saying the older child will serve the younger child, which implies what about the superiority of her children one over the other? Who will be superior? If the older one will serve the younger one,
the younger one
will be superior. So she knows that the older one is already a lost cause. She knows it. If we would know in the future that our students, that our weaker students were lost causes, and many times it's the weaker students who are not the lost causes and the stronger students who are the lost causes, because sometimes people ignore the stronger students so much, or the stronger students think that they can do everything. But if we would, you know, if we would know, if we would be able to see 20 years in the future, then we would know which students to focus on. Although one could arguably say that maybe the 20 years in the future is happening because of our intervention, you know, or if we wouldn't intervene, then that's the 20 years, whatever. But she knew in the future that Yaakov was going to be the one and Esav would not be the one. Esav would be less than the B list and Yaakov is the A list. So she knew. So it could be that it wasn't just favoring, that she was saving her energy. She was being the most efficient she possibly could. Possibility number three. Cheshkuni. Vayahav Yitzchak, source number three. Vayahav Yitzchak et Esav. Why does it say Yitzchak loves Esav? Gabe Esav, he makes a very interesting grammatical distinction. If you look, just to give you a three-second lesson in grammar, there are many different tenses. We have present tense, past tense, future tense, like we have in Hebrew also. Present, past, and future. What? So, vayahav is past, actually. Because it's the vav ha'ipuch, it's in the past. Vayahav is past, ohevet is present. Vayahav lo'olamid, shelo haya Yitzchak o'avo tamid. Yitzchak didn't love Esav all the time. El abo tozman, he tried to feed. The only time he loved Yitzchak was in Yitzchak was feeding him. But about Yaakov, who was a complete person, she always loved him. And in addition, then he has this little footnote. It's the way of a woman to love the one who raises her animals. Hello. Where is this coming from? Totally out of the blue. So the first one, a very nice little boy, little Josh, okay, we have it. Yitzchak only loves Esav some of the time, not all of the time. Rivka saw truly who Esav was. She didn't love him at all. But when Esav was feeding Yitzchak, then Yitzchak loved Esav. When he wasn't, he didn't, and everyone's focus was on Yaakov. Not also the best parenting example, necessarily. But then he has this little thing at the end. What does this have to do? As someone who raises the animals, what does that have to do with Yaakov? Here we see Yaakov's perfect child. Yosef Ohalim, he stays at home. He reads nicely. Source number four, if Yosef, of course, explains to us, where is he getting this from, Chizkuni? Yosef Ohalim, if you go back to the immediate pasuk right before, where the two brothers are described, and Esav is described as a hunter and a gatherer, or at least one with game or hunting or trapping in his mouth. Mm-hmm. Yaakov is described as a Yosef Ohalim, one who is intense, says the Bechor Shu'in. There's a double entendre in there, a double meaning. He's intense, and he's intent.
There
you go. Okay. Two words or one word? Okay. Yosef Ohalim umiknet. He says, what does it mean that he was dwelling in the tents, that he would take care of the cattle? Because how do I know that a tent dweller is talking about one who's taking care of animals? Because that's what shepherds do. They make a little shepherd's hut to protect themselves from the elements. And that's the difference between Yaakov and Esav. Not that Esav would go out in the field and Yaakov would stay home in the house and read his book, but that Esav would take care of the field and the hunting that needed to be done, and Yaakov would stay closer to home, or do not even closer to home. He would take care of the sheep. There's no hunting involved in shepherding. It's quiet, sitting, Yosef Ohalim, who would sit in tents. That explains to us, therefore, Rivko Hever Yaakov, who then says that he was Shahiyago Etzon, Roseik Bishuvo Shalom, that he was a shepherd, and he would take care of things. Women like those who take care of young, of kids and sheep, because they're gentle, they're caring, as opposed to a hunter who's going to be crude and rude and boorish. He was a shepherd who was gentle. He understood the ways of the animals. He had to take care of them and be sensitive to them and stuff like that. So Rivka naturally loved him because she was a woman. Okay, fine. Very nice. But we get better. Radak. We've been reading Radak. Some of you may have noticed we've been doing Radak quite a bit along the way because he has really interesting insights sometimes. If you remember, we started with him way back with Abraham and Sarah, which caused a big uproar when he said that Sarah was wrong in taking Hagar in the house, Sarah was wrong in doing all those things to Hagar, even though Abraham said she could, and Abraham really, Abraham didn't say Hagar was wrong because he didn't want to bother Sarah. We had issues with him in terms of an anti-feminist, possibly male chauvinist. Okay, let's see what he says here. Ve'ya hav. Ein tzarich lomar ki Yaakov haya ohev. There's no ohev. Ki yoter v'yoter haya ohev Yaakov m'sheya ohev Esav. There's no need to mention that Yaakov was loved. Because of course Yaakov was loved. He was loved way more than Esav. The lo haya ohev Esav, ela sheya mevilo tzai l'machalo. The only time he loved Esav, the only reason he loved him, very similar to Chizkuni, he said, is when he brought him food to eat. As it says, b'fiv, in his mouth. So he's explaining that when it says that he had food in his mouth, what it means is that Esav put food in Yitzchak's mouth. Uvashar ha'tzayid hu mut'am. And the meat of the trapped animal is very tasty. Uhu haya zakein yotem shibim shana. He was older than 70 years old, Yitzchak was. Ki lo haya Esav yodeh latzur ha'chayot b'talyol b'kasho, because Esav didn't know how to hunt these animals with the equipment that he needed. He had to be more than 10. And if he was born when Yitzchak was 60, Yitzchak is at least 70 years old at this point. The Rivka Haytas is explaining why did he love Esav so much, because he couldn't do his own hunting, and Esav did it for him and brought him really tasty meat. The Rivka haitau hevet Yaakov livado. Rivka only loved Yaakov, no emotions at all positively towards Esav. Why? Lefisha hayaholech b'derech chayim. Because she saw that Yaakov's whole focus was with preservation of life, particularly if you take the opinion that he was a shepherd. The whole goal of the shepherd is to keep the wolf away, to keep the sheep eating and healthy and comfortable. His whole job is in the preservation of life. The Esav, the Derech HaMavet. Esav's way of life was totally connected to death. Because he's killing all these animals. Ki lo dayo shelo haya holech b'derech chayim v'lo mitashek b'chachma u'b'darkei elokim. It's not enough. It's not just that he didn't follow the way of life and then he didn't deal with wisdom and take care of those kinds of things and try to follow God's ways. He chose himself a disgusting kind of job. It wasn't just like the it wasn't just the non. It was the anti, what he was trying to do. To put himself in physical danger every single day. He was an empty man. And he was a reckless man. And Yitzchak, because he was old. The Yosef Babayit and Yitzchak stayed at home all day long. He was appeased and seduced, so to speak, by Esav, who brought him food every day. That Yitzchak is already old. He can't see well. He would stay at home all day. He had nothing to do with the daily runnings of the household. So why do we need to know that he had any kind, if he was old and he stayed in his house and had nothing to do with the regular goings on of the household, then he would know nothing about his children to have a preference of one or the other. So why does the whole story appear here altogether? How does he have any emotions for any of his children? The story shows up at the beginning of their growing up and the stories of their deeds. This is written immediately before the selling of the birthright, so that we can understand Esav's recklessness and stupidity and total emptiness of character. Why do we need to know this whole story? To know what a horrible person Esav was. It wasn't just that Esav didn't keep the mitzvot, but rather he did the anti-mitzvot. Mitzvot are supposed to bring us life. We're supposed to be concerned with the preservation of life. Esav was concerned with one thing and one thing only, and that was the preservation of death, to keep killing animals and bringing them to his father and letting his father eat them so that his father will like him and probably eventually, hopefully, give him the bechorah. Let's look a little bit more into Esav's personality. So far, do you think this is nepotism or good sense on Rivka's part? To focus on Yaakov and not to focus on Esav? Or to love Yaakov more than Esav? What do you think?
It's good sense.
So far. Okay. I brought you the source number 6 just as a side point. I really should have put it in earlier. I was reading an article by a man named Shimshon Nesher. He wrote this very interesting article on the whole relationship Yitzchak Rivka as a parent, as spouses, and the whole story. Very, very interesting article. If you're interested in reading it, it's written entirely in Hebrew. It's on the internet. I'm happy to send you to the website. very interesting article. And in there he explains that when the Torah says Yitzchak et Esav, that Yitzchak loved Esav and Rivka loved Yaakov, that it's not talking about love favoritism. What it's talking about is taking care of their physical needs. Look in source number 6. He brings another example in Devarim later on. He brings Pasuk, this is chapter 10, verses 18 and 19. Osem Shvat The Torah tells us, act appropriately with the orphan and the widow, the Ohev Ger, and love the convert, Latet Lo Lechem L'Simla. Explanation being, give them bread and clothing. Take care of their needs. V'ahavtem et ha-ger, and then you should love the ger, ki gerim hayitam eretz Yisrael, because you were also strangers in the land of Mitzrayim. So Shai Shemshon Yasha used this pasuk to understand what does it mean? Was it favoritism? No, it was division of labor. That Yitzchak saw that Esav needed more attention. And he had the time and the ability to focus on that, on Esav, because Rivka was running her household.
Well, that's what the teachers are
this
saying.
This is exactly what the teachers are saying, right. Very possible Shemshon Yasha is a teacher.
You see, they need more attention and you develop more relationships.
Exactly, that's because awesome. He knows maybe that Rivka is busy running her household. So Rivka doesn't have time to devote to a needy child. So he is focusing on Esav, hoping to turn him around, whereas Rivka is focusing on Yaakov. Because in addition to the question that we have on Rivka favoring Yaakov, which I think we pretty much understand now that she had this nebuah, she knew what the future was going to be. But with Esav already showing negative qualities, our other question is why is Yitzchak wasting his time with him? And the answer being here, first of all, as a father, he has
maybe he wants to be a role model.
An obligation. But secondly, right, I think he wants to be a role model. He wants to take care of him and make sure, like, to try to raise him properly, to follow in the right ways. Okay. So let's take a look into Esav a little bit further to see if he wanted the special attention from his father or the neglect from his mother. Source number 7. Before we look at source number 7, I'd like to turn a few pages to the end of chapter 26, Perek Chaflav. This is the story immediately before. This is right after Yitzchak and Rivka go down to Gerar, and the whole story with Abimelech, and he's going to take Rivka. We've been through this several times already. And in chapter 27, we're going to begin the actual blessing story with the switching of the Bechorah of the birthright. But in the last pasuk, thank you, on page 133, actually 133 and 132, pasuk Lamed Hey, Perek Chaflav. The very last pasuk says as follows. When Esav was 40 years old, he took as a wife Yehudit, the daughter of the Eri the Chiti, and Basmat, the daughter of Elon the Chiti. They were a source of bitterness, of bitter spirit to Yitzchak and to Rivka. And wonderful translation here. We have source of spiritual rebellion, which is not at all a translation of the words. But it is an interpretation. Morat ruach means bitter spirit. They were the source of great anguish and sorrow for the in-laws, these women. Who were the Chiti? Those of you who remember the seven nations of the land of Israel, the Chiti is one of those seven nations of the land of Israel. What other injunction do we have in the Torah until this point about marrying these women? Who can't marry them? Abraham told Yitzchak at the beginning of Parsha, told Eliezer at the beginning of Parsha Chayesara, that he should find, maybe Yitzchak promised, made Eliezer promise that he was going to find a non-Kanani woman for Yitzchak. But that was something of prime importance. And here, what does Esav go ahead and do? He marries a Kanani woman. And these women are not good women. What do? Marat Ruach, Archibald has already translated it for us, but I don't have art school with me when I prepare my classes, so bear with me for a moment. And source number 7, Marat Ruach, Lashon Hamarot Ruach, that they're bittering. Everything that they did caused anguish to Yitzchak and Rivka, that they served the Avodah Zarah. Now, Rivka ran away from this. Yitzchak had never had any exposure to this. But this is not something that was promoted in the house of Rivka and Yitzchak. In the house that was promoted and encouraged in the grandchildren of Abraham and Sarah. Esav is the grandson of Abraham and Sarah, and he goes and he marries these women who are serving Avodah Zarah. They're serving idols. They're worshiping to their gods, to their nothingness, to their emptiness. Cause unbelievable anguish. Says Chizkuni, he furthers it. What did they do? Lefisha Tilamar, further on, we're going to say that when Rivka says to, and further on, we read this last week, that when Rivka says to Yaakov that he cannot marry a woman from Canaan, she says, Im lokech Yaakov isha mibnot chet ka'ela mibnot ha'aretz, and he marries someone from Benot Chet, in other words, someone like the ones that Esav married, Lama lichayim. I have no reason to live. So this explains her further statement. Why would she be so negative against the women of the land? What does she have against them? She has two daughters-in-law who are terribly horrible to her. Kadam ulamanacha kan, ulamjacha kan, shelo hayuno kol Yitzchak l'Rivka. They weren't comfortable for Yitzchak and Rivka. Va'od. And further, im hayalahem l'Yitzchak l'Rivka nakat ruach mehen. If Yitzchak and Rivka, very interesting, the Hadith says, if they all got along together, hayu yoshvok v'ayin echad, they would have all lived in one house. That was the cultural, we've spoken before about cultural practices, that was a cultural practice. The Amish do it today. The Arabs do it today. Many people do it today. You have multiple generations living in one household. If they all got along, Esav and his wives would have been living together with Yitzchak and Rivka. Ukshayavo Yaakov, we told her brachot, and then when Yaakov came to steal the brachot, to take the brachot, Yuhu Moziot, Yitzchak, people would have said to Yitzchak, Ein to Esav Bechoracha, this isn't Esav, because people would know who they are. Lefichach, Kadam Bilemadcha, Kan, Shahayu Marat Ruach, Yitzchak, Begersham, we told that Yitzchak, chased these women out of the house. What did they do that was so wrong? Aside from the fact that they would do the Avodah Zarah, explains the Radak, in source number 9, Vatiana Marat Ruach, Mach Isot, Umimarot, Ruchan, Bamashem Haraim. They would make Rivka so mad with what they did. Vegan, not just the Avodah Zarah, but Vegan, the Esha Kabayin, Hayuoshot, Hetach, Rachonam, Hafizan. Rivka wanted a white tablecloth, they would on purpose put a blue tablecloth. Rivka wanted to them, she made milchik for supper, they purposely set the table with flashing dishes. Rivka wanted clean sheets, they left the dirty sheets on. Rivka wanted the dirty sheets to stay on because she didn't want them to get worn out by washing too much, they would take them off the bed and wash them again. I don't know, think of really annoying things. They would cut the cheese with a flashing knife on purpose. You know, like, really, You know, I have a hard time getting along with somebody else in my kitchen altogether, and I can't imagine getting along with somebody, you know. If someone's going to help in my kitchen, I'm happy. You know, help me, you know, like, here, do this. But what if she does something else? Okay, I'm making carrot cookie. Can you please peel these carrots? And then I turn around, and what does she peel? Potatoes. You know?
Make a potato cookie.
I know, but I already have the whole mixture of the sugar and the brown sugar. Is that going to go with my potato sugar, brown sugar, cinnamon? I don't think so. Maybe with three potatoes, but not with my potatoes. These are really horrible, horrible ladies. And again, look at the end of the doc. Why do we need to know this? Why do we need to know that Esau went and married women? First of all, was he ever told not to marry these women? Not that we know of necessarily. But he does know the whole story that Yitzchak went, you know, that Eliezer went far to find a wife for Yitzchak. So he asks at the end, why do you have this whole story of him marrying these women who are so nasty? Again, to understand the recklessness of Esav and the lack of respect. These women he met, that he married these women who angered his parents, and he didn't rebuke them, and he didn't take them out of his father's house. They had to wait for the father to chase them out of the house.
But did he do it out of spite?
It sounds like. Wouldn't he, like, do something along the way? How could it get to the point that they were marat ruach, that there was such a bad feeling between them? You would think that he would try to fix it.
Jealousy?
I don't know. I don't think that that's, you don't get that feeling.
Maybe it was birds of a feather. That was his, he didn't think they were so bad.
Anger.
But the point is, you have this complete lack of respect for the
parents. Exactly. But that was his nature.
But that was his nature.
Disrespectful.
And that's exactly the point. That was his nature. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about. So now we move to the end of our story, the end of Parakaf Chet, the beginning, of Parakaf Chet, which is the end of Parsha Toldot, when Rivka and Yitzchak send Yaakov away. And I'm looking at Pasuk Hey. There's a very interesting wording here. Vayishlach Yitzchak on page 142 and 143, verse 5, Pasuk Hey. Vayishlach Yitzchak et Yaakov. Yitzchak sent Yaakov away. Yeah, Vayelech Padan Aram, he went to Padan Aram, El Lavan ben Betuel Ha'arami, to Lavan the son of Betuel the Arami, Achi Rivka, the brother Rivka, Eim Yaakov Ve'eshav. The mother of Yaakov and Esav. Aside from the roundabout explanation. If our whole focus is on Yaakov, Why is Rivka purposely referred to here as the mother of Yaakov and Esav? Number one.
Well,
number two, if Esav was first, she should be mentioned as the wife, the mother of Esav and Yaakov. Yeah?
She hasn't disowned him.
Esav, yeah. Completely, totally. Although at some point she had absolutely nothing to do with him, except to kick his wives out of the house. Okay. So let's take a look at Radaka in source number 10. They sent him away to Laban's house, who's Rivka's brother. The Ikdim, I'm in the fourth line, almost to the last three words. The Ikdim Yaakov le'Esav. Why does Yaakov's name come before Esav? Lavur ki aim Yaakov haitad be'emet. She was really and truly Yaakov's mother. Shaita ohebet oto yotir mima shaita ohebet Esav. Because she loved Yaakov more than she loved Esav. And because she had mercy on her son Yaakov, that's why she sent him away to her brother. Even though she was a mother to Esav, she didn't love Esav the way she loves Yaakov. It was known in Padan Aram to her relatives. They all knew it. It was clear that she loved Yaakov that much more than Esav. Unbelievable. Okay. I don't know. Like, even if you're going to favor your kids, don't do it so obviously. But it's very clear.
I think he's obviously
not the one. That Yaakov is obviously not the one.
Not even not the one, but a difficult, difficult person.
And therefore, you abandon your child, mm-hmm. your biological child?
It's so painful.
It's so painful to you.
There are people that have to do that.
Yes, and that's exactly the point, because at a certain point, you have to say, not only that you
it's
can't take
your
it,
own life.
Yes, what about your other child?
Right.
What about your other family? You have a whole family. Sometimes you have to focus exclusively on the Yaakov. And the only reason, though, I'm making an emphasis, the only reason she was able to do that is because she knew for sure, 1,100%, that Yaakov was going to be the greater one. Because she had that nebuah. She had the prophecy. She had the word direct from God.
Isn't there a saying about when you, I forget the saying, love. What's the first part of that?
I don't know what you're referring to.
When, if God forbid, a kid is on drugs or something.
Okay.
Tough love.
Tough, yeah, right.
Tough love.
Tough love. Love.
Okay.
There's a saying like that. Well, maybe in, she would disinherit him, so to speak.
And hoping that he would then
turn
back
around.
To her.
Right.
Okay. Very possible. They have all these seminars now on that tough love, you know, how to raise your child with tough love. But a very interesting thing happens at the end. Just a few seconds later. Look what happens, okay? This is great. Just the next pasuk. Vayar Esav ki veirach Yitzchak et Yaakov. Esav saw that Yitzchak gave Yaakov this blessing that he should go in peace. Not the whole big blessing. This blessing, now he should go in peace. V'shilach oto padana aram v'kachat lo misha misha. That Yitzchak had sent Yaakov to padana aram to take a wife there. V'varcho oto, that when he blessed him, Esav heard about Yitzchak telling Yaakov not to marry Canaanite women. He heard that Yaakov listened to his father and to his mother. He went to Padan Aram. And what else did Esav notice at this point? And at this point he realizes that the Benot Canaan are bad in his mother, in his father's eyes. Vayelech Esav el Yishmael. So he went to Yishmael, his uncle. Vayikach et machalat by Yishmael ben Avraham achot nevayot al nashav lo leishar. And he took these two daughters, he took this daughter of Yishmael as a wife for himself. So is this act an act?
It's rebellion almost.
Is it rebellion? Or is it an attempt at righting a wrong? An attempt, is he looking at Yaakov and saying, well, maybe I need to mend my ways in X, Y, Z way. by not marrying the Benokanan, and he doesn't leave them. You see, the Torah makes a point of saying that he took this new wife in addition to the wives that he already had. So he doesn't leave the wives he had, but he tries to maybe sort of make amends with Yitzchak by marrying this Yishmaeli person. Rashbam, who we began with and we're going to almost end with, and source number 11 says as follows. In the third line, third to last word, Chashav Esav bilibo. Esav thought in his heart, the fact that I married one of the daughters of Canaan made it impossible for me, it stole from me the bracha of Abraham, the blessing of the inheritance. So therefore, so he took a daughter of Ishmael who comes from Abraham's family. In the hopes that now he will be able to attain the bracha and the inheritance of Abraham. But there's something a little missing. He's trying, but he's not trying hard enough. Because the message that was given to Yaakov wasn't simply don't marry from here, but go to our family. Go to your mother's family to marry. And Sefarno, who we also sort of began with, he was the Italian doctor guy, says a very interesting insight here. Vayar Esav ki beirach Yitzchak. That Esav saw that Yitzchak blessed Yaakov. Vihidei Esav. Gam shara asher Yitzchak shabirach et Yaakov tivau shaloli kach yishar min beno Kanan. He saw that when Yitzchak blessed Yaakov, that he commands him not to take a wife from the beno Kanan. Shazah hayah neged brachato, that this was against his bracha. He didn't pay attention to all this. But he saw it. But what did he see? He saw he didn't see the idea that these women were against the bracha, were the antithesis of the bracha. Rather, he saw that these women were not what his father wanted. And he thought that it was because these women didn't do what he wanted. And he quotes the pasuk from before. Halach al Yishmael. He came to Yishmael. With this, he acknowledges shehayah Yitzchak yachol limchot be'esav k'shet nasah haknanit im hayano tein lev. K'mo shehi'erta atar Rivka al Yaakov. That had, this teaches us, that had Yitzchak paid attention, he could have rebuked Esav. Because when Esav married those Canaanite women, because Esav was someone who was very subject to his father's approval and very much wanted his father's approval. And Rivka, we asked the question last week that Rivka makes this whole show of secretly telling Yaakov to go off to Padan Aram and then tells Yitzchak, you know, I would die if he married any of these girls. And then Yitzchak tells Yaakov directly, yeah, go to Padan Aram. Why did Rivka take such a direct interest in what happened to Yaakov? Because that was her focus. But who was supposed to be Yitzchak's focus? Esav. And according to Sfarno, he neglected his focus. What was supposed to be his focus? That Esav didn't have to be as bad as he was. That Yitzchak could have said something to Esav at the time that he married the Canaanite woman. He could have said to him, Esav, you're doing something wrong. And Esav would have listened to him. Because he was very concerned with his father's approval. That's why he gave him all the food. Because he wanted his father to like him. So we see here that the favoritism isn't so black and white. I think we're up to 9 o'clock just about. The favoritism isn't so black and white. It's not simply pure favoritism. Rather, each parent, I think, at this point, was taking the qualities that they saw needed nurturing and was worthy of nurturing and would benefit from nurturing and invested their qualities in those children that Rivka knew, that Yitzchak speculated that possibly Esav was a very needy child, and with the right proper attention, he would become something great. And those were Yitzchak's intentions. However, according to Sforno, he didn't carry them through. But Rivka understood and knew what the nevuah was, and she knew that Esav had no hope, that there was nothing she could do for Esav. So therefore, she focused on making Yaakov the most positive person that she could make him. She did a pretty good job.
Really good job.
Next week we'll do Leah.